Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is the meeting of the Safety and Security Committee. I apologize for the belated start this morning. We'll still go for about half an hour till about 11 o'clock when
Mr. Chair.
The board will
Mr. Chair.
General session or executive session.
Mr. Chair. Can I certify the audits and
Yes, I was going to recognize Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right.
Who was to do some recognition and certification of
Thank you. I'm Tony Giancola, Chair of the Audits Investigations Committee, and I move that the Audits Investigations Committee certify to the best of each member's knowledge and no individual member dissenting that at a just concluded executive session of the Audits Investigations Committee of June 25, 2015, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under Board Bylaws Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive sessions were convened, were heard, discussed, or considered by the committee. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? None heard. The motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Giancola. I'm Michael Goldman, Chair of the Safety and Security.
I'd like to point that we will not be holding the Governance Committee meeting this morning, so there will be a little more time here. One item that was on the governance agenda is the change in reporting relationship of the General Counsel to bring the report to the board as a, and shared with the CEO. We hope to get that done before we start recruiting for a General Counsel, but I think I can hopefully represent to those candidates that that is the direction we're moving in, and we'll formalize it when we're ready to deal with the other issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our first order of business this morning is just a motion for certification of the executive session of the Safety and Security Committee, which was held this morning. So I move that the Safety and Security Committee certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at the just concluded executive session of the Safety and Security Committee of January 25, 2015, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive succession under Board Bylaws, Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive sessions were convened, were heard, discussed, or considered by the committee. I'll entertain a second.
Second.
All in favor of the motion, please aye. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any dissent? Hearing none, the certification is adopted. It's passed. Good morning. Everyone, thank you for joining us now for this public meeting of the Board Safety and Security Committee. To begin our meeting today, I'd like to ask Metro's Chief Safety Officer, Mr. Jim Dougherty, for our safety contact message of the morning. Thank you, Mr. Dougherty.
Thank you, Chairman Downey. Good morning, members of the Board. In the event of a building alarm, we would ask that you exit through one of the exit doors to my right or left and cross Fifth Street and meet in the corner of the National Building Museum in the lawn area there. Also, if needed, an AED is available next to the security officer station right outside this room. Our safety contact this morning, in light of the recent weather, deals with lightning safety for you and your family. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, marks June 21st through 27th as Lightning Safety Week for 2015. NOAA has confirmed 9 lightning fatalities so far this year. More than half occurred during recreational activities. Lightning kills an average of 49 people a year, and hundreds more are severely injured, according to the National Weather Service. The odds of getting struck by lightning in any given year are approximately 1 in 1 million, but the odds of getting struck in a lifetime are 1 in 10,000. More than 70% of lightning deaths occur from June to August, with more fatal strikes on Saturdays and Sundays, according to NOAA. From 2016 to 2014, 64% of the deaths occurred during a leisure activity, such as fishing, swimming, or participating in sporting activities. What you might not know about lightning is that all thunderstorms produce lightning and are dangerous. Lightning often strikes outside the area of heavy rain and may strike as far as 10 miles from any rainfall. If you can hear thunder, you are in danger. There is no safe place outside in a thunderstorm. Plan ahead to avoid this dangerous situation. If you're outside and hear thunder, the best way to significantly reduce your risk of becoming a lightning casualty is to get inside a substantial building or vehicle as fast as you can. In addition, you should avoid the following situations, which could increase your risk of becoming a lightning casualty. Avoid open areas. Stay away from isolated tall trees, towers, or utility poles, and stay away from metal conductors such as wires or fences. There is no substitute for getting to a safe place. Thank you, Chairman Goldman. That concludes our safety contact.
Thank you, Mr. Dougherty. First item of business is the approval of the agenda. It's a short one, so I'll entertain a motion for approval of that agenda for today. Thank you, Mr. Bolger. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The agenda for today is adopted. Second preliminary motion is the approval of the minutes from our last meeting of April 23rd, 2015. I assume everyone has an opportunity to review that. I'll entertain a motion for approval of those minutes.
So moved.
Second? Mr. Giancola? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the minutes of April 23rd are approved. I'm sorry. I guess I should correct that. I correct my own thing. Those are the minutes of the May 28, 2015 meeting. Please, minutes will be corrected to show that there was a motion for approval of the minutes of May 28th, and they were duly seconded and approved unanimously by the committee. We have one item on today's agenda, an overview of the various external reviews of Metro that have either already been conducted or are currently ongoing by the Federal Transit Administration, the GAO, Government Accounting Office, and the National Transportation Safety Board, ongoing its investigation of the January 12 smoke incident at L'Enfant Plaza. NTB's hearing was held Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. Based on that FTA report, we have much work ahead of us as a committee and as a board. We are committed to ensuring that we address the findings in all of these reports, and the Safety Committee will continue to serve as an important forum to ensure oversight of the overall improvement program. I say that not only on behalf of myself, but all members of the committee, and I believe all members of the board as well. I'm now going to ask our Chief Safety Officer, Jim Dougherty, the Deputy General Manager, Rob Troop, and the Chief Financial Officer, Dennis Anasoki, to provide an overview of the FTA report, its findings, and do the same for the GAO study and the NTSB hearing that was conducted over the last 2 days. Then we'll have time for questions and committee discussion.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just comment. We have asked staff to give you a relatively brief summary of these three to allow time to we know the board and the committee has questions. We'd like to be able to be responding to that. And so there's no attempt here to shortchange the discussion. We just thought we'd give you the quick overlay of the three action items and then be able to be responsive to you and your questions. So Dennis, Dennis, if you would address the GAO first.
Thank you, Jack. Mr. Chairman, the GAO's review of WMATA focused on the FTA's FMO recommendations as well as the NTSB recommendations. Overall, the GAO met with a cross-section of WMATA staff to gain a better understanding of the progress that has been made by this organization with respect to those two areas. While the final report has not yet been issued, we anticipate that the GAO's findings with respect to WMATA's FMO compliance activities will be consistent with the report that is provided to this committee on a monthly basis. However, we also expect that the recommendations will also build on the role of WMATA's new Office of Internal Compliance, as well as current efforts around enterprise risk management to help ensure a stronger financial set of internal controls. Those conversations, as you know, took place between March and July of this year, and we expect both our response to them and the final recommendations in the coming weeks and months. With that, I will turn it over to Jack.
Very good. Yes, let's do the three summaries first, and then we'll open.
Just the FTA had assembled 10 teams comprised of 35 technical safety, and transit operations experts to complete a comprehensive assessment. Over a five-week period, actually, they reviewed and assessed a wide variety of aspects that related to safety management. Over 1,000 documents that included policies, procedures, and plans were submitted, in addition to having over 300 WMATA staff interviewed as part of this process. As complete access and transparency was given to the FTA inspection team, many of the findings mirror WMATA's own inventory of concerns. FTA acknowledges clear and substantial progress and states, as even as yesterday, that the system is safe. However, they did have some findings that Mr. Troop will go into further.
Thank you, Mr. Daugherty. The report represents 54 findings between rail and bus, and with those findings, there are 78 required actions for rail and 13 required actions for bus. The findings are listed here, and many of these we've been addressing currently and are actively engaged in resolving. Next slide, please. So this slide indicates some of the initiatives which we were engaged in prior to the FTA required actions. As you can see, it includes the RCC staffing, the allocation realigning of existing resources began there in the middle of 2014, the necessity for more track access, which we have been engaged in, which is since 2010, we have been doing a significant amount of taking single track outages and long-term shutdowns, 55-hour shutdowns, to be able to get a lot of work done, in addition to being able to do the Dulles Silver Line. The track circuit project, the gap analysis for the track circuit project was ongoing. The track circuit replacement project, part of the NTSB recommendations, and again, progressing with the Plant 1000 manual. And certainly I'll be able to talk about these further and provide more clarification to the board should they desire. Next slide, please. I also want to talk very quickly about the NTSB early recommendations. All ventilation system and state of good repair has been assessed, and the documentation and formal closure for this to the NTSB will be submitted in late September. For both R15-9 and R15-10, we had a kickoff meeting yesterday with our consultant who will be engaged in establishing the playbook for emergency management and then also developing the training manuals from that playbook specifically to go into our training sessions. We expect completion of this in mid-March of 2016. As was discussed the other day, the cable connector assembly work is being progressed, and definitive schedules for this work is being developed. And we're pleased currently with the progress on that. We have enough materials and parts on hand to be able to affect that work. And again, we'll certainly be able to answer any further questions that the board may have that for, on that for clarification for the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Troop. One thing I'd like to mention on that SMI inspection, that is the first such inspection that has been actually conducted in the country of any transit agency. As far as the NTSB hearings, Tuesday, June 23rd, the National Transportation Safety Board of the NTSB convened its investigative hearings into the January 12th incident outside WMATA's LaFont Plaza station. The hearing consisted of four panels, including the state of WMATA's infrastructure, and emergency response on day one, and WMATA's organizational culture and FTA and talk oversight on day two. The hearing started with an overview of the incident provided by the NTSB's lead investigator, and this included an animation. It moved into the first panel, which is the state of WMATA's infrastructure, and there's no specific, you know, one thing noted on the power cables, there's no specific life cycle of power cables that is provided by the manufacturers. The life cycle depends on the environment. Cables are inspected with thermal imagery every 3 months. There have been four smoke incidents in 2015 related to power cable issues, and that's out of a total of 200 smoke incidents, which the cable is one of the ones that happened at LaFont Plaza. For water intrusion, WMATA's system for tracking tunnel leaks is through our Maximo maintenance system. There can be 3,000 to 5,000 water leaks in the system at any given time. The drainage system handles an equivalent of three Olympic pools of water per day. Tunnel ventilation. The LaFont Tunnel was constructed prior to the standards, or primarily of the National Fire Protection Association 130, that required tunnel ventilation systems to be capable of handling smoke incidents. Studies conducted in the 1980s identified possible ventilation improvements to meet new standards. However, the cost in the 1990s to upgrade the ventilation system was more than $500 million. Newer segments meet our current standards. As far as the radios, prior to the January incident, radio testing was done on an informal basis. Since this incident, formal procedures have been developed for jurisdictional testing. WMATA maintenance work tickets are now generated based on testing, and a new outage map has been created. The radio outage on the day of the incident was with DC's underground system, which is maintained by WMATA. Panel 2 dealt with emergency response. Our Director of Emergency Management delivered an overview from WMATA's perspective. The panel discussed the unified command. WMATA does not believe the unified command was established on January 12th, as is required in the COG Fire Chief's agreement. Had unified command been established, a number of emergency response issues could have been avoided and critical information could have been shared between agencies. Radio communications. WMATA and the jurisdictional first responders operate on separate radio systems. As previously reported, the WMATA and MPPD radios were fully operational on January 12th, and the DC radios did not work in the underground. The Operations Control Center, the capabilities and training of WMATA's ROC employees were discussed as it related to handling incidents, communicating with emergency responders and on-scene personnel, operating fans, and the use of checklists during an emergency. For third rail power, WMATA determined the train 302, the train in the tunnel, had insufficient power to move back to the station. The presence of train 510 on the platform in LaFont Plaza did not prevent train 302 from returning to the platform to evacuate passengers. Montgomery County Fire Chief had noted that he has seen a 500% increase in calls for service from WMATA, specifically related to brakes, arcing insulators, and smoke on the red line. In prior years, the average was 20 to 30 incidents per year. Day two, panel three looked at the WMATA's organizational culture, and panel four looked at the talk of the FTA and the talk oversight. Safety improvements were discussed. A number of critical improvements were noted that had been put in place since 2009. This included the Board Safety and Security Committee, significant capital program improvements, the roadway worker protection program and plan, confidential close call reporting, safety committee meetings, employee surveys, and peer reviews, to name a few. On-time performance versus maintenance was discussed. Balancing passenger service and necessary maintenance is a challenge for all transit agencies. The FTA report found that current WMATA service levels are not providing adequate track time for maintenance. However, Mr. Troop reinforced that on-time performance does not take precedence over safety critical maintenance issues, and said in response to the NTSB questioning that he has not felt pressure from the board to put service performance ahead of safety. The close call program that's in place at WMATA, that was really discussed relatively extensively. The effectiveness of the close call program, and all the actions recommended through the close call program have been enacted. A representative from Local 689, which represents most of WMATA employees, stated that he is a strong supporter of the close call program. However, he also expressed a lack of employee trust in the system, as well as concerns about the new disciplinary matrix. Both WMATA witnesses and the NTSB board talked about the importance of safety, reporting, and accountability. Information sharing. The District of Columbia requested real-time access to WMATA security cameras for incident management, which Chief Pavlik responded is something that is currently being examined for feasibility. Metro is also working to create a fire liaison position within the ROC, especially during the rush hour periods. The panel four discussion, that was on oversight, specifically with the FTA and the TOC. The NTSB concluded examining the Federal Transit Administration and the Tri-State Oversight Committee's oversight responsibilities. No witnesses representing WMATA or Union Local 689 participated in that panel. The FTA oversight, FTA did note that they do not have direct oversight responsibility. The responsibility is delegated to the state safety oversight agencies. The FTA has two field inspectors on staff compared to more than 350 at the Federal Railroad Administration, which does have direct oversight responsibilities. The FTA's safety management inspection was discussed, and the FTA noted that this was a large-scale safety management inspection of WMATA, and as I mentioned earlier, was the first inspection of its kind conducted by the FTA. This inspection was not only of rail, but also of the bus mode. Or as the associate administrator stated, they cast a wide net and did a deep dive review of WMATA. For FAB 21, the current POC is not eligible to be certified as a state safety oversight agency and will be converted to the Metropolitan Safety Commission for that purpose. There was also discussion regarding FTA's resources and budget to implement MAP 21. The FTA rulemaking process is underway, and new specific standards are currently lacking for transit agencies that may be developed in the coming years, which they also noted will take some time for the new standards and rulemaking to take place. There was no explicit criteria that were provided for determining the effectiveness of the TOC. Although the TOC highlighted its lack of enforcement powers, diminishing its oversight capabilities, FTA's witnesses stated that a more effective TOC might have avoided the chain of events that preceded the incident of January 12th. TOC, we believe, inaccurately reported during the hearing that WMATA had not provided corrective action plans to the TOC for the most recent three-year review. And just to highlight, that's a report that I believe goes to every board member and has since June of 2010. WMATA corrected the information during the party questioning period. TOC had mentioned that a WMATA whistleblower complaint came to them prior to the January 12th incident regarding problems at the ROC. The TOC had plans to evaluate the ROC, however, that was put on hold due to the FTA inspection. And finally, during the hearing, a local 689 rep requested and was granted access to attend the monthly TOC meetings with WMATA, which are held routinely, including one this afternoon. I'd now like to pass Mr. Requa for discussing our next steps.
For next steps, the GAO report, we have until June 29th to provide comments back to them, which we are planning to do early next week. We anticipate a release of a final document from the GAO most likely in August, and so we look forward to receiving that report. In regards to the FTA report, Mr. Troop mentioned, there's 91 action items. We have been given the opportunity to respond to them in 30 days as to comments, clarifications, any questions that we have so that we can finalize the action items and then prepare a final report and a commitment by 90 days in September. And we certainly will come back to the board with our recommendations, clarifications prior to sending it to the FTA. And also, we have the responsibility of identifying any action items for the FY16 budget that would require board action. So we will come back with recommendations in regards to any impacts on the operating or capital side that we need to ask the board for approval. And finally, we still are a party to the NTSB investigation. I think with all the submittal of information, I think the last 2 days provided a good opportunity to question and comment and clarify many action items, many items that had come up in the investigation. Also provided us opportunities to provide more submittals to the FTA, to the NTSB, which we will do. And we continue to be a party and follow the guidance and directions of the NTSB in regards to their investigation. So with that, Mr. Chairman, staff is open to questions, and I'd be pleased to try to respond to anything that the committee asks.
Thank you, Mr. Requa. I think we will now probably have a very lively discussion of both the FTA report as well as the last 2 days of NTSB hearings. For my own part, as a board member, I must tell you, though, that I was really distressed by what I had to read about in the FTA report. I was particularly distressed about the findings that went to the Operation Control Center, the vacancies that are there, the lack of recertification, some radio communication issues. I was equally distressed by the findings that went to maintenance, that maintenance is limited, and the FTA's finding that this is a trade-off of safety for providing our consumers with proper service that, if true, is very distressing. I appreciate that staff has some concerns with some of those findings, and I want to give staff an opportunity to respond to some of those things to the extent you wish to today. But I must say, as a board member, that these are matters which I was not aware of, and it's very distressing to read about them for the first time in a federal government report rather than receiving them from staff as a information item or a report to board members for their review. Finally, I just want to state that what I also found equally distressing in the report was the areas of what I would call systemic errors and problems that are not coming to the level of the board. If the board, or I should say if the staff, needs additional resources to hire additional controllers, we want to know about it. If there's a lack of maintenance hours or maintenance hours are somehow being reduced in order to provide greater service for customers, I want to know that I have to make that decision, and I want to have an opportunity to decide which way I want to go. I don't want decisions to be made, even though we have delegated a good deal of responsibility to the general manager and the executive leadership team. I think there are things like that that should come to the attention of the board and the things that I, as a board member, would like to decide on in the future, if not in the past. I'll stop there, but I suspect that some other board members might have comments. Mr. Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As vice chairman of this committee, I wanted to read a statement. Is that okay, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Okay. Until now, the public and our board have been at best misled, okay, about the status of safety improvements made since the 2009 crash on the Red Line. As Chairman mentioned, reports of this committee and others have consistently told us a different story than the one we have learned from numerous external parties. We've been told since 2009 that we're making great strides in improving safety and reducing the backlog of deferred maintenance. And I'm just saying, as Vice Chairman, as the Chairman pointed out, I am not going to accept these misrepresentations anymore from management. We have a lot of new board members. We have conference calls that the Chairman and I participate in that we find out, as the Chairman mentioned, that we don't have enough staffing at the control center. We want to know about that. We want to know about how to fix it. We want to know about how to provide incentives, whether it's monetary or whatever, to keep the control center operational and fully functioning. I'm dismayed to learn about the significant problems that Metro were identified not only by the FTA, but have come out of the NTSB investigation. This is unacceptable to our citizens, our visitors, and our constituents. There's lots of safety shortcomings that we're going to hear the staff come back to us on rebuttal, but if we have insufficient maintenance, poor inspection processes, and a dysfunctional rail operations center, the board needs to know how we are going to correct those deficiencies. So I pledge to our writers that we'll stay on top of this to ensure they address each and every recommendation from the NTSB and the Federal Transit Administration. And in addition, we look to the TOC and its successor, which I understand is going to be called the Metro Safety Commission. I got that right, Lynn? As a key player in providing this board with effective and objective oversight of our safety program. And I look forward to working with my fellow colleagues on this and staying on top of this issue because it's job one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Before we ask the staff to respond, let me see if other board members would have comments, yeah. Mr. Downey.
One comment, particularly with respect to the Federal Transit Review, which was the first they've done, but clearly a very thorough one. What is in that report are not suggestions or recommendations. I just want to make it clear, these are legally binding directives that we must do. And I think it's obviously important that we do them. It is important that we converse with them over the next 30 days about how they may have missed pieces of it, or particularly if we are doing other things that will achieve the same result. They are open to that discussion. The Federal Transit Administrator, Acting Administrator Therese McMillan, has asked to meet with the board. I believe we can schedule that on the 23rd of July when we have our board meeting. They will be following up. The TOC will be following up. We need to follow up. I think one of the useful outcomes of their broad brush review is we can use that as a roadmap for enhanced oversight, enhanced sharing of information, much as we have done over the last year with respect to the FMO report, month by month, week by week. What is it we have to achieve? Have we achieved it? Are there any roadblocks in the way of achieving that? It's what we should be doing all the time. This will give us a basis to focus that, to keep us involved, to keep the public involved in terms of what we're doing, and keep all of the organization working in the same direction. There clearly is indication in the FTA report that at different levels in the organization, in different silos within the organization, there are different views about what is going on or what the status is. We all have to have the same information base, and I would use this opportunity to create that for us and for the public.
Mr. Giancola?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the report and overview of the three reports. It's almost like a perfect storm to some degree, and I noticed there are some similarities in each of the reports or consistent deficiencies. While I'm certainly concerned and we need to take action, I'm very anxious to hear what your report will be in response to clarifications of some of the comments and certainly possible disagreements, and certainly at some point whether or not some of the items were new items that even caught you by surprise that were involved. I look at these reports as an opportunity as well to allow us to improve our oversight by developing better performance measures. What do we really need to be looking at each month or each couple of weeks? So the KPI program and the kinds of things we need to kind of keep an eye on would be helpful. I noticed the smoking incidents was one that pops up. Certainly staffing levels at certain critical parts of the organization is something we can monitor probably more closely. So I look at some degree, while concerned, an opportunity to improve our oversight and to get better. And certainly, ultimately, we need to have in our SMS safety management system some incorporation of all these new items or items that we're already working on in a priority system of actions that we need to take. So a lot of work to do, and certainly the board will be here to support you.
Any other comments?
Okay. Thank you.
Order in the session.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to reiterate the comments that have been made before about the seriousness of the recommendations that came out of the FTA report. The most troubling to me were the large number of recommendations and the very serious criticisms of the Rail Operations Control Center. And the Rail Operations Control Center is the heart of our rail system. And if it is not operating at peak efficiency and peak effectiveness, we are going to have serious problems, and we can't guarantee safety in the rail system. I welcome the staff's clarifications on the FTA concerns and the FTA recommendations, but I really think that we have to do a top-to-bottom review of the Rail Operations Control Center, very seriously considering the recommendations that the FTA has made, and either fixing them or coming up with very good reasons why they don't need to be fixed. So I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Ms. Hutchins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to simply comment that I think, as Mr. Giancola says, we have a perfect storm with all of these reviews occurring at the same time. But I think it's an important part that we focus on. And I'd like to kind of take us back a little bit and recall that we recognize that we run a system with sort of the tightest amount of open maintenance and operational oversight than most any other place. And the board and the region kind of agreed on that years ago when we changed our operational hours. We made our operational hours longer in order to provide a better opportunity for our region to have an economic, more viable one. And at that time, we were very clear, the board and the staff, that safety was still going to be the primary focus that we had. While we were anxious to deliver the service, we were anxious to also make sure it was a safe service. Well, this came back to us again in 2006, and when the accident occurred, that we recognized that we were pushing the system to a limit in terms of the amount of access that is needed in maintenance, but that we would have to do it as efficiently as possible and as safely as possible. And I think that's really important to understand. I think because we have the two things that from our customers that push against what we do. We want reliable service and more service. We want safe service, reliable, and more service. So getting all those right is difficult, but we're going to be held accountable. And I feel no problem with the need to be held accountable. But I think it is important that the board hears on a frequent basis where we are and how we're moving through that, as well as these reports. I welcome the SMI that came out. It was new. It's another means of seeing what we're doing. We don't call it a Bible. It is a review, and we need to respond to it, and we need to make clear what the report says that is actually happening and what we need to do to meet the recommendations that are there. So while it is a perfect storm, I think the best things you make out of these storms is to be a better organization. And I think we, as NTSB in 2006, responding to the 2006 accident responded, there was an improvement. The continuity of that is what we're looking for now. How much more continuity can we have in terms of that? So I think this is a very difficult piece to hear. The next part I'd like to hear is the staff's review of each of them so that we really understand those things that they have begun to work on are actually going to occur and that they will occur. And with this board's concurrence on the necessary effort to do so.
Yeah, thank you. And certainly I share, I concur with all the comments that have already been expressed by my colleagues here. Certainly not something in terms of safety or the challenges that the system face that we want to be hearing, but nonetheless, certainly we're going to be committed to being responsive and addressing them in a fair and a timely manner. I think what the riding public and the citizens, taxpayers need to know is that for certain things are going to change around here. It's not going to be business as usual anymore because safety, we've already, since the Fort Totten incident, we committed ourselves as a committee, as a board of the whole, to be the safety committee, pretty much that we're going to be addressing safety and we're concerned about it, as well as reliability and everything else. But incidents, accidents will happen, things will do happen. But I think what's lost in all of this is the fact that, we have an aging system and we have infrastructure that needs to be addressed. And when I was interviewed by a local WTOP, when I was out in San Francisco at a mayor's conference last Saturday, they called and wanted to chat with me. I thought they wanted to talk to me about the conference, but they wanted to talk to me about the NTSB report findings. And so I said, well, the bottom line here is that, the board's committed to safety, but it's really about not the lack of dedicated funding. And we need to make certain that that's something that's always on the radar for us because there's, a lot of things that we need to do to address the infrastructure that will help us to, moving forward, to be a much safer system. But then there's the human side of it in terms of personnel, and, certainly there are some challenges here, but we're hearing from the staff that interim CEO, general manager, that these things will be addressed. So thank you.
Mr. Dormigeau.
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Daugherty some questions. I gather from some of the statements that you've made this morning here in public and also in the closed session that you find the FTA's safety audit to be unfair?
I'm not saying that it's unfair. What I'm saying is that some things need to be clarified, I believe, and I'm speaking on my behalf versus theirs, or, you know, that they felt compressed, and this is talking to folks that actually did it, to get this document out, to get it done before the NTSB hearing. And some things that we sat in an eight-hour meeting, we normally would see a document in advance. We didn't see this document in advance. We saw it the same time that you and the public seen it. So there was no opportunity, which is a first in, you know, my 30-plus years, that we haven't had an opportunity to review the document. We did have a comment session that there were statements that were flashed up, if you will, in a sentence, and we commented on them. Very few of the comments were actually taken into the report. I think it's a good report. I think it's a thorough report. The process in which it's handled, that's concerning to us. Also, the fact that it's many of the things that are stated are not regulatory or done anywhere else. And the examples of that would be fatigue management. I am very proud and pleased that WMATA is doing that, but there's no standard and there's no regulation that we are required to do that. The confidential close call reporting. Again, there's no standard, there's no requirement that we're doing this. We're doing this because we believe it's a good safety practice and the board has supported us in that. But yet these are noted as findings and directives. No other transit agency in this country has to follow those either at this point in time. Now, if they make it a regulation, then yes, that would be accurate. So this is, I say it's a new world in the process that's being done. But I don't, you know, it's, we're the first that this is being done with, which is good. We will improve. We will learn. I'm excited to do that. I always want to, you know, learn what we can do to be better, to be safer, to make sure nobody ever gets hurt. You know, that's certainly our goal, is zero injuries. Has to be. But it's just in the process, as I'm saying, there's things, you know, as we went through it and we will respond, that had occurred when they interviewed some employees, and I can talk about it, maybe even my own group, that was referring to 15 years ago. A lot has changed in the staffing levels in various areas because a function that may have been done by one group has moved to another group. Not that it has been omitted, it's been changed. You know, who actually handles that functionality? And that's what I'm saying. I don't want to say that it's unfair. We have a great working relationship, you know, with the FTA safety office. I'm certainly pleased that I serve on the tracks committee that they talk about. So I actually got an email yesterday on the fatigue, you know, from that committee on the operator assaults. You know, that's a working group that's also there. If you notice, it says more safety department involvement is one of the things, which we are involved. We have the bus safety group looks at the shields and everything. So that's what I'm saying. And I'll, you know, wrap up with that in the questioning, but it's, I'm happy to provide more information and we'll do that as we move forward.
Okay. Well, I continue to hear you say that this is the first time that the FTA has performed a safety audit of this scale and depth, and that some of the expectations are not held of other properties. Why is that relevant to me?
The only response that I can give you back, you know, is that there's, it's like we don't have a regulation, we don't have a rule requirement. We're doing that, and it's one of the things, we all have varying opinions. As a safety professional, I have opinions on the way I think something ought to be done, but does that mean that I turn it into regulation that someone has to follow? And I guess that's what the importance is, that we're going to do what needs to be done, and we're looking at, it's just in the way that it's coming down as possibly, I take it where there's a violation, you know, violation of a fatigue rule that doesn't exist. That's what I think is important. Okay. As a board, we have been doing a lot to move forward.
In the closed session, you said that you didn't feel that the FTA would have scrutinized any other property in the aftermath of a similar incident. But because we're in the nation's capital, the FTA is focused on WMATA. Why did you say that, and why would I care if they're doing it here and not somewhere else? Why would I care as a board member?
I can tell you that was the statement they made. That was the statement of the FTA that was actually
you
made.
You seem to share the view that this is only being this scrutiny is only being directed at WMATA because we're in Washington D.C. Why would that, even if that were the case, why would I care as a board member if the scrutiny is exposing concerns and real lack of management control over key safety issues? Why would I care whether it's only happening here?
That particular point you wouldn't care about.
I mean, don't.
I care.
But you seem
what they're saying.
You seem to think that the FTA may be picking on WMATA because we're in the nation's capital.
Not at all, sir.
No.
I'm not saying that. And if that's what came across, then I'm sorry for that, you know, making it sound that way. I mean, I've said I've worked with them, and I welcome all their, you know, anything that they can help us do to improve safety. Mm-hmm. Certainly welcome that.
You've said that there are different opinions about safety and management issues. What's your opinion of your own department's performance? What would you rate your own department on a scale of 0 to 100?
I guess, you know, as far as we're always improving, we're always learning, I believe that we would certainly fall in a scale of probably 75 to 80%. And we're constantly involved trying to prioritize and manage the resources as we go forward and as we're able to do things in a system of this size.
So should I expect, given the report that we've read, should I expect dramatic corrections on the part of the FTA of their report to support the idea that our safety department is a 75-80%? Because reading this report, I would not reach that conclusion.
And I don't know if you had the opportunity to read their safety gap analysis,
mm-hmm.
which the highest level is 4, and they did rate us at 2.4, and says, you know, it actually notes the improvements that are being done. They're just not fully implemented. And that's taken right out of the safety gap analysis report.
What's the most aggressive action that you've taken in your position to correct an unsafe condition or practice?
I would say...
What's the most controversial thing you've done to either direct Mr. Troop or Mr. Requa to stop doing something? What's the most aggressive thing that you've done as a leader?
And on the bus side... Whenever we took the Orion buses out of service, when we took the 95 buses out of service, it never went back into service due to the fire situation that occurred on those buses, and those buses were replaced. And Mr. Troop wasn't here back in 2000, I believe it was July 2010, when we had the original problem with the 4000 series doors, and the entire fleet was taken out of service at that time when we were having problems with the door motors. Certainly that was controversial. When we were looking at the loss of shunt tool and the building of that tool so that we had a level of understanding that that tool would provide us an adequate loss of shunt awareness, which now we get every day, at least it's constant, but every day, twice a day, I get a report as well as others in the safety department for any concerns or that we do not have a problem with a loss of shunt. And I would believe those are three pretty significant things the safety department's been involved with. But I will also say that whenever we're dealing with Mr. Troop and Mr. Requa, they hear what we have to say when we're doing that, whether it's safety certification, that safety is involved. We work closely with the operations group. And the idea is to actually, so that there is an understanding of why or what is the safety concern. And that was, you call it controversial, but that was the 4th of July, I remember. I was out with a former DGMO, and we were with a TOC representative and looking at the 4000 series cars and the door motors and the bushings, and I had spoken with the TOC policy group, and those cars were taken out of service at that time until we could figure out what the problem was. So anytime, and it's certainly not, but with the rider safety being the priority, if it's taking a fleet out of service, then that's what we'll do to be safe. Whether it's an alignment, we're out on a safety inspections as we move forward. The safety shutdown, the safety stand downs that we're a part of, that we go out on the weekends. We have two shifts of employees that go out from typically 6 a.m. in the morning until 1 o'clock in the morning that are looking at the work as it goes done. And then we have construction safety officers that also go out and look at the issues. And anything is addressed at that time. But that's three of what I would consider of the more significant issues that we've been involved in, and were in an agreement, but those vehicles went out of service, as well as the loss of shunt. We wanted to make sure that was done, and also the NTSB was very happy with the work that we had done. Roadway worker protection would be another one. If I don't know, we want to go into that detail, but we have. And I will tell you, the fatigue risk management, that hasn't been an easy program to get through, because that's a major change in the organization, is the fatigue program and limiting hours of service. It's a labor issue as well as it's a management issue. But in order for our employees, to maintain safety, I would say that is one of the ones that has been, you know, that's definitely been one that there's obvious various opinions. Serving on a tracks committee, all the transit agencies, there's the operations and there's the safety, there's the management, there's the collective bargaining agreements. How do you work to ensure that we have employee safety maintained as well as customers?
Mr. Dorn, sorry, let me just comment back to your original comment. We have an awful lot of oversight of WMATA, and we appreciate it. So whether the FTA is looking at us separately because we're doing something that nobody else does, I think is fine. The fatigue program, some of these other programs that Jim has mentioned, we appreciate the comments. I don't believe we're going to counter many of the findings. I think what we're going to do is clarify some of the things that we're actually doing to address those in a language that that we think is more appropriate, and that we will have a lot of activities that we're going to be coming back to the board and declaring that we need to make changes organizationally, financially, whatever it takes to make this system safer. So whether this is their first review or their 100th review, to me it doesn't make any difference. We're going to help them with the review. We're going to clarify from our position what we think needs to be said, and to clarify the situation so that we have a clear understanding of the road going ahead, as so that we're all on the same page and that the board is with us and that the FTA is with us and that we can comply to meet the findings that they have said. As the chairman has said, these are directives that we are required to do. We're going to do it. We just want to assure that we all have a clear understanding of where we stand with the actions that we have already taken and to the actions that we need to take going forward.
I wanted to give staff an opportunity to respond more broadly, one or two, to the FTA report, but I also wanted Mr. Troop perhaps to address some of the testimony that came out of the NTSB hearing in the last 2 days. There seemed to be some conflicting testimony, some testimony on the one hand that there was 100 feet of platform space in the Lompon Plaza where the train that was engulfed in smoke could have backed into and unloaded the passengers, but this was not visible by the controllers in the ROCC. On the other hand, there was testimony by, I believe, a Metro employee that the train operator couldn't have done that because he didn't have sufficient third-rail power in order to execute the reverse motion back into the platform. Can you comment on that and what your understanding of the facts are and whether that testimony can be explained and as to what your understanding of the factual situation was at that morning? Afternoon.
Certainly. So in any smoke situation, the proper procedure is for the operator to call on the smoke. The RCC then tells the operator to reverse ends and pull away from the smoke situation. Obviously, it's a lot quicker to be able to evacuate all the passengers on the train rather than have them self-evacuate or wait for fire and EMS to be able to come in. So they had executed that that order. The train operator was able to key down and key back up within 2 minutes. That's where he keys down the one end. He walks through the train and he keys back up. The data recorders indicate that that was 2 minutes that he did that. So he got back there in that time frame. The rail indication on the ROCC was that the third rail was live. In other words, energized. There is no specific indication on the train itself to indicate whether that third rail is energized or not. There's opportunities for an operator to be able to make those assessments, but he has to be very, very deliberate about them. It's basically he has to look, you know, where the emergency lighting is, the different items on that. So I don't want to say that it was readily available to him. That can be ascertained, but not very easily. He keyed back up the train. He attempted to move his train. He was unable to at that period of time because we had what we called a brakes and emergency. What happens is a train starts to lose power. The brakes are actually, because it's a fail-safe system, brakes are actually held off by air pressure. When a train loses air, there's a heavy spring that pushes against the brake. So that it becomes a brakes and emergency situation. What they can do then is they can actually go to the train and release those brakes manually. He was instructed to do that. He was still not able to move his train, and at that period of time, passengers self-evacuated. The RCC took down third rail power completely on that end, and fire and EMS did arrive on the scene after having depressed the ETS button for the station platform. The situation that caused some confusion as to whether or not, had that third power been energized, could that train have been moved back to the platform with train 510 in there with enough space for approximately two cars? And absolutely, there's means and methods for the operator to be able to safely move a train back into the platform with a train sitting there. We do it for trains where we do recoveries on trains, where we may have a train that is disabled. Another train will come in, close the gap on that train, so that's able to be done. The interlocking that was basically the interlocking is where the tracks, where you can change from one track to another, where the track switches are, so you can change from one track to another. An interlocking was there. It was able to be controlled by the RCC. They could have lined the switches properly and then given a permission by a red signal without any problem for that train to be able to close up there. So that plan was in the process of being executed. However, it was not able to be executed because, unbeknownst to the rail RCC and also to the train operator, there was insufficient power within the third rail as a result of the cables burning that could power that train specifically. So that's the scenario of how that train.
So it's your understanding of the facts that the sparking incident, the burning incident of the insulators or whatever was the cause of the cable,
yes.
that resulted in a loss of power at that incident, and so at no point could the train be moved back in reverse back into the L'Enfant Plaza station.
And to clarify, Mr. Goldman, I don't want to say it was a loss of power, but insufficient power. Insufficient power.
Insufficient power.
Yeah, we don't believe that there was, you know, right now we don't believe that there was a total loss of power in the third rail, but it was insufficient.
Thank you. I appreciate the comments of the board members so far, and I just wanted to make a request. I think that some of the context that Board Member Hutchins and Board Member Yule made, both about the lack of dedicated funding and the decisions we've made in the past about the balance between customer disruption and safety and maintenance, needs to be revisited. I know that we're kind of all inured to this situation, but I think what we're asking you as a board is to forget all of that and bring to us as a board, as if we had never addressed it before, issues of safety that you are concerned about and what your needs are, whether that's staff or funding, and then lay it at our feet. Make that our problem about getting the resources that you need in order for our system to be safe. I know that this has been the way it's been since we began operating, but I'd like you to forget that. And let's treat this with the urgency that I think it needs. And Tony Giancola talked about this being a perfect storm. I think we need to revisit all of our assumptions about these issues, whether we've addressed them in the past or not. And I think the board would like the opportunity to be able to act in a different manner. But I know one thing for sure, we can't do things the way we've been doing them and expect radically different outcomes, and we need some different outcomes. So let us help you to get what you need to make the improvements that our customers deserve, that our WMATA staff deserve, right? And that we all want to see for our system. Thank you.
I'm not sure I'm so much in favor of Mr. Giancola's perfect storm analogy metaphor, because as I remember the movie, the trawler eventually was swamped and everybody died in the movie. So
That's not going to happen here. It's the situation, not the outcome.
I'm sorry?
It's the situation, not the outcome.
Yes, I understand. I just want to make that clarification on your
Mr.
part.
Goldman, I would like to speak publicly on two issues, if I could.
Yes, I would
for
like
clarification.
To,
thank you. In regards to the RSC staffing, what I want to make very clear, this was not a slow attrition of staffing levels that we got to the fact that we were understaffed. What I want to make very clear is what this was is in the early part of 2014, we did an assessment of our staffing levels that were required in the RSCC, and we made a determination to be able to add 23 positions into that RSCC, which we began recruiting for in July of 2014. We're in the process of recruiting for those, which is, again, this was not a slow attrition. This was not something that the staff wasn't paying attention to. This is simply because we increased the staffing levels by a significant amount, and we had always felt that this would be a two-year recruiting process to be able to get through that, to be able to train people appropriately on that. So, again, like I said, in July of 2014, we began recruiting for these rail operational controllers. And again, so that was what the FTA had seen. Currently, we are 11 people short of our 49 allocated positions. We are 11 people short for our rail operational controllers on those. So we're being very aggressive in managing that. In regards to the track outages, what I will say is that there is absolutely no precedent of operations over safety. I want to be very, very clear about that. I feel very, very comfortable in being able to come to the board at any time, under any circumstance, and under any situation, to be able to say we did not make service because of a safety issue. We have done that before. We have had the single track. For example, when our track geometry vehicle was out there late and had found a situation, staff has instructed if it's a priority repair that they need to make, they have that. RSCC understands that that needs to be done. Operations does not take precedent over safety. In regards to the amount of track utilization that we have done, we have significantly increased the amount of track utilization, the single tracks, the shutdowns, the different items that we have taken since 2010 to be able to be very aggressive in our track, to be able to reduce the backlog in the maintenance items that we've taken care of. We're very deliberate about that. We recognize that there would be a dip because of some completion of some items, including the track circuits on the Red Line Phase 1 project, the Dulles Silver Line extension, which took about 12 shutdowns on the Orange Line to be able to do. And also in regards to the three-day weekends, the reason we were taking the three-day weekends is because we were doing the 178 guarded number 8 turnouts, which the work environment required us to take 3 days on those. We needed 3 days to be able to complete that work. Since we had completed those NTSB required guarded number 8s, we no longer needed the 3 days to be able to do that. I instructed staff to back off and just use the weekend because we do have a large number of commuters coming in who are not federal employees and do not have some of those specific days off. So, again, I want to be very, very clear on that end. We're very deliberate about it. As I said before, we're looking at single-track opportunities. We come to the board with opportunities for a complete red line shutdown in August for 6 weeks for the medical center, not a complete red line shutdown. For medical center. Mr. Groening, I appreciate your comments in regards to the different things that we can do, and we will be looking for ways to do that. Again, the balances, the operations and safety, where operations will never take precedent over safety. You know, I'm committed to that. In regards to the backlog of work orders that the FTA had issued on us, those were defects that were not of a safety issue. Those were defects that didn't even rise to the level of a speed restriction. I look at the speed restriction report every morning with staff at a 7:30 morning meeting with engineering staff and maintenance and operation personnel staff to understand the speed restrictions that are out there and have any risen to the level of safety that we need to accommodate. None of those have risen to the level of even being speed restrictions. And again, to give you an idea of what some of these are, small wheel burns on the rail are a defect. What that requires us to do is to be able to put a 39-foot plug of rail in there. It's, again, it's not even a speed restriction. It is not a safety issue, but it is listed as a defect. So, you know, staff is very cognizant, very cognizant of the fact that, you know, safety is, you know, will take precedent over operations. ROCC and everybody, you know, recognizes that, and I feel comfortable that we're doing that. If I was to find an issue with that, we would take care of it immediately. If a specific incident was to come to my attention, I would take care of that very immediately. And again, Mr. Groening, to go back to your comment, I appreciate that. We will take a very fresh look at it. We are in the process of doing that, so that request is very timely for us. So we will be able to do that and be able to provide some information back to the board.
I appreciate those comments, and I would just say that we do have an aging system that I know that we spend a lot of time looking backward at what has happened in the past and fixing things that others have identified, but, you know, we need to encourage a culture, even more than we already have, of thinking about what is the next thing that we need to be worried about, and I think we do an adequate job of responding and reacting to findings that others have made, but, you know, I expect us to find these things before anybody else does. And, you know, just as an example, all the comments about the water intrusion, that can't be good, right? So those are the kinds of things in our aging system that we need to get out in front of. And I realize I wasn't trying to suggest that we've made adverse decisions in favor of customer convenience over safety. I'm just saying we are budget constrained. 2 years to ramp up for the ROCC is in part a budget constraint, right? If we said we need to do it immediately, we would do something different to hire up or to hire temporarily to fill those positions and to, you know, to make it more urgent. So that's what I'm saying. We might have some ability to address some of these things more quickly if you'll tell us what you need.
I do want to clarify that specifically, and I know you were using that as an example with the ROCC, but we were not budget constrained with those. We allocated the budget for those immediately, and we're in the process of hiring those. Again, one of the issues that we had 700 applicants. From those 700 applicants, we were able to glean that down to 30 applicants, and from those 30, we were able to select 14. Of that, I think, you know, we had a attrition rate and a failure rate of about 50% on that. So it's a very difficult job to fill. One of the things that we're doing on that, and we're doing very quickly, is revamping our training program so that we can cast a broader net beyond just FAA flight controllers and people who have existing rail transit experience. So we're looking at better ways to train, taking a, you know, basically what would be a military model on that. I'm fond of saying, you know, my son was not a mechanic when he entered the Air Force, and in 6 months they made him the crew chief on a C-17. You know, we can take that as an example of understanding, and that's for an investment of 6 years. You know, we should have an investment of 25 years, so we should have similar types of training programs on that. So
we
that's
need
what
to
we're
wrap up, unfortunately, but I just want to raise two further issues. The report of the FDA is dated June 17th, so I assume the 30-day period is July 17th, and so staff will have some draft to us by July 6th, July 7th. When will we get something as to as a board to be able to review?
Yeah, in that area, again, we've been with the NTSB for the last 2 days, so we are, you know, aggressively now going to come up with the clarifications, comments back to the FDA and get that back to you and to them.
Okay, so we're looking for something.
Yes, soon.
July 6th, 7th, 8th, sometime in that time frame. Mr. Evans, you had a comment?
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you all for your comments. Because it was raised twice here, I didn't want to miss the opportunity. The dedicated funding source, the mayor raised it, and Harriet, you raised it. And maybe sometimes in adversity there is opportunity. The dedicated funding source for Metro is something we've all been talking about forever. My 10 years on the board back in the 90s, we discussed it, and then it comes and goes. The District of Columbia, with legislation that I sponsored and got passed, is in the position of doing a dedicated funding source. We have dedicated a portion of our sales tax and gas tax to doing this. We are there. Maryland and Virginia, we would be looking to do something similar. The Secretary of Transportation of the U.S., as I understand it, is bringing the two governors and the mayor together soon. Can we get this to the top of the agenda? Can we get a discussion of a dedicated funding source to the top of the agenda? This may be our opportunity. I recognize, Mr. Chairman, this is a safety committee meeting and not a discussion of finances, but I don't want to miss this opportunity. If we are only going to talk about it, and this all goes by, and a year from now we're still talking about it, we've missed a chance to get the dedicated funding source in front of everyone. Again, I'm repeating for the third time, the district has passed the legislation. We're on board. We need to get Maryland and Virginia on board and get this dedicated funding source in place and get the money to Metro. I recognize that the public and the governing bodies are saying we should cut Metro until they get their act together. I got it. And that is such the wrong approach, as we all know. We should be doing exactly the opposite. So I don't want to miss this opportunity. I just wanted to put that out there. Secondly, before I got here today, I was at a community meeting, and when I mentioned that I am now on the Metro board, clearly one-third of the comments changed to Metro. And just three things for our management here. Complaints about signage. People can't find their way around Metro. I don't know, but that's what they're saying. People ride Metro. Visitors who are visiting the city say our signage is just not good. And so can we look at it? Secondly, they can't understand the train operators. Are we still in a situation where the train operators on the Metro are talking and people can't understand them? I remember riding it and it's all garbled. We can't still be there. And yet, those are the complaints I was hearing this morning at a community meeting. And then finally, a gentleman got up and said, if we're going to be on the trains and they're going to stop and I'm going to be stuck, can't we have free Wi-Fi on the trains? Now, I think that came up at one of our board meetings, or somebody's talking about that. But again, where are we on providing free Wi-Fi on the trains for when the trains stop and I'm sitting there or someone's sitting there with their computer, and at least we give them an opportunity for something to do? So these came up this morning at a meeting about 120 people in Penn Quarter. Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You. I wish we had time to address all those issues this morning, but we do not. The chair of the board is giving me the hook and saying we have to move on. So I will ask if there's any other business to be brought before the Safety and Security Meeting Committee this morning. Hearing none, committee stands adjourned. Thank you.